Okay, we're picking up for the Gemara on Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. We are 15 lines from the Vadra Rahu Savta. Just want to apologize to those listening to Yud Torah. Something went wrong with the recording on Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, and it got cut off and I don't have it, so I apologize. But the Mirtz Hashem, hopefully, we'll continue with 15 lines from the top of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. That's where we ended off. Hayi Savta de'aseh lekameder of Nachman. There was an older lady who came before of Nachman, Amra Leh, and she said to him, Reish Galusa v'kul Rabbanu devi Reish Galusa basuka gzula havayasir. She was upset. See, the Reish Galusa and all the Rabbanu and all your big rabbis are sitting in a sukkah that's stolen. And Rashi explains, the wood was stolen from her. Apparently, the workers of the Reish Galusa, obviously, I assume without asking the Reish Galusa, stole the wood that she had, and they used it for the sukkah. So she thought, you guys aren't yotze sukkah, get out of there, why are you using the sukkah? Tzavcha v'lashke b'rach Nachman. She kept screaming, get out of the sukkah, get out of the sukkah, you know, you're not yotze, get out of there. And Rav Nachman kept ignoring her. Amrele, so she said to Rav Nachman, Isis d'havila lavud plasma v'simni sh'avde tzavcha kamaychu. A woman whose father had 318 servants is screaming before you. This is a reference to Avraham Avinu. We know that when it came to the war with Lot, it said that Avraham took with him his 318 servants to go fight and go capture and recapture Lot. So she's referencing to Avraham Avinu. Why she referred to that a deeper thing? Why dafka is that the way she refers to Avraham Avinu? But either she was trying to show that I'm a Jew, so you should pay attention to what I'm saying. And you don't listen to her, you're not listening to me. Amar Lev Nachman, Rav Nachman ignored her, and he said to the Talmidim who were there, Pa'isa Yida. She's this woman's a shrier. She's crying, she's screaming for no reason. She's not entitled to anything other than the value of the wood that was stolen for, but not for the actual wood itself, and therefore it's not an issue with the sukkah over here. We know that the Mishnah Gittin tells us that one of the things that was a takana is called takana sheshavim, that if a person steals, and we gave this example already in yesterday's daf, that if a person steals a chair, steals wood, and fashions it into a chair, so we don't make him destroy his chair and give back the wood pieces that he made, because then he's going to come less likely to return it. Rather, we just evaluate how much was the wood. Normally, Veshiva Sagzila tells you have to return the exact object that you stole, but because over here we're afraid that the person's not going to, it's going to lead him to be less likely to return the object that he stole, so we allow him to give the value. So if the wood that he stole was $10, we make him give back $10. We don't make him destroy his whole chair that he just built is now worth $200. We don't make him destroy that chair. Rather, we allow him just to give back the wood. So too over here. Now that they used it for the building of the sukkah, they don't owe you the value of the wood itself, rather the value of the wood. So the Mishnah, so the sukkah that they're staying in, based on that, would be kosher. So that's the whole thing over here. That also, in the case of the sukkah, we assume that they built a sukkah and destroying it would be significant enough to assume that takanas hashem would apply, and therefore that's why they're not in a puzzle sukkah. So the Gemara says a related ruling. Amar Ravina. Ravina said, "Hai kishura de metala de gzula." If you have a beam of a sukkah that had been stolen and then was built into a sukkah, Avdei L'Rabbanan Takanta, the Rabbanan also had their din in that case as well. And if the person stole it, wanted to only pay back the value, then he doesn't have to destroy his whole sukkah by removing that beam in the sukkah. He can just return it. So the Gemara says, Mishum Takanas Marish, because that reason is because that's at the end of the day, that's going to be the same thing as the Takana of Takana Seshavim, that here also the stolen crossbeam is a similar thing, that it's going to be difficult for him to destroy his sukkah, and we allow him to continue to live in the sukkah, and for those 7 days. So the Gemara says, Pshita, so that's Pasha, meaning it's difficult for him. Maishtamaitim, how is this any different than the first case? The pieces of wood, which a person uses to build a sukkah, why is this beam going to be any different? Why would he have a havamina? Why would I have any assumption assuming that this beam would be any different? And I would have a havamina that you would have to return the actual beam and not be able to continue living in the sukkah and just pay the value of the beam. So the Gemara answers, no, there really is a difference. About the same way, because I would have said the following. Eitim shchiche aval hai lo shchiche. When it comes to the wood, we know wood is all the time it's available. You could go by, anyone could go to the forest and chop wood. That's everyone, wood chopper, it's the easiest job. So that, everyone could do it, and therefore, the Rabbanan allowed a person to just return the value, because it's not going to be easy for the person to go then ahead and buy new wood or go get wood, because wood is very, very accessible. However, aval hai lo shchiche, when it comes to the beam, it's not nearly as accessible, it's not easily available as as wood. So Imala, I would have thought that maybe the Takanas Hashavim doesn't apply, that you actually have to give back the beam because it's difficult to find such a beam. I would have thought maybe the Rabbanan don't enact their enactment of Takanas Hashavim. Again, Midal Reisa, you actually have to give back the same thing. The Rabbanan are the ones who are allowing you to give back the value. So I would have thought maybe there they don't make a Takana Kamashman, so therefore I do need Ravina to tell us that even in the case of a beam, which is more Chashiv, and I would have thought maybe the guy really wants that beam back, it's harder for him to find it, we still allow Takanas Hashavim, allow the robber to pay the value and keep the beam. So the Gemara qualifies as a honey bilay begoy shiva, but this halacha is only going to apply during the 7 days of Sukkot. Aval levasar shiva hadar be'eni. But after the 7 days of Sukkot have passed, the beam itself is going to return to the owner because the requirement to live in the sukkah makes it that it's going to be, Rashi explains that that's going to be, that it's going to be a permanent structure during this man of Sukkot. However, if the person wanted the compensation during Sukkot, then the person who stole it would be exempt from paying giving the beam back. Rather, he would just give him the value. However, if he asks him after Sukkot, when the sukkah is no longer going to be comparable to the to a case of the house or something else that you're building, so then the robber would be required to demolish the sukkah and return the actual stolen beam. And the Gemara is going to apply this also, but that's only v'ichabir Rabbi Batina. That's only where it's a regular. You just have the beam on top of your sukkah. However, if the person who stole this beam, he attached it with cement, and then it can be comparable to the case of a house. Then even after Sukkot, he only have to be give the money of the value of the beam, because then it's very permanent. It's just as permanent as Rashi points out, just as permanent as a house or anything else. You mamish made something, so then we have takanos hashavim, but we don't make a big tircha on the person who stole it. We want him to give the money back, so he'll give the money the value of the beam instead of the actual beam itself. Now the Gemara finished the subject of a stolen lulav, so now we're going to discuss the next case of a dry lulav. Tana, we learn in a braisa, yavish pasul, that in the case of a dry lulav, it's going to be pasul. However, Rabbi Yehuda considers a yavish lulav going to be kosher. So the Gemara wants to know, why does Rabbi Yehuda say that a yavish is going to, a dried out lulav is going to be kosher? Amar Rava, machlokas belulav. That this must be, this machlokas is only about a lulav, to the exclusion of an esrog, because Rashi points out, the pasuk says, pre eats hadar. It says that the fruit of an esrog specifically should be hadar, should be something that's beautiful. So you can't argue that it shouldn't be beautiful. We're going to see at the end of Maskana, we're actually going to assume that you can. But right now, that's Rava's whole argument, is that for sure, an esrog has to be beautiful, but not a lulav. A lulav, it never says explicitly that it has to be beautiful. The Gemara says, there are abundance of remakshin and lulav esrog. No, but the Rabbanan says that we have a hekish. We have a comparison in the pasuk. My esrog by hadar, af lulav by hadar. The pasuk says, l'kachtem chem b'yom rishon pre eitz hadar, right? Kapos tamar v'nav feitz avos v'arvi nachal. So the fact that the pre eitz hadar, the esrog, is mentioned right, and then right after that is the lulav, and avos avos v'arvi nachal, then the hadasim and the avos are all mentioned together. The fact that this hekish, the fact that they're all connected to each other, that tells us that they should all have a chiyuv of having hidr, of having something that's more chashuv. So the Gemara says avulav by hadar. So therefore, everything requires to be beautiful. Rabbi Yehuda sever lo makshin alulav esrog. Rabbi Yehuda apparently didn't have, Rashi points out, he apparently didn't have this masorah, didn't have this tradition that you have this hakesh linking the lulav and the other dalad binim to an esrog. So therefore, he held that they do not require hidr. They don't require the esrog to recall other binim. However, according to Rava, even Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree that, as the pasuk says, pre eitz hadar, it has to be beautiful. So therefore, he holds that hadar clearly means by a lulav, even by an esrog, everyone's going to agree that you need it to be beautiful. So the Gemara says, lulav labai, Rabbi Yehuda hadar, they were challenging Rava. Now, is it really true that Rabbi Yehuda does not require an esrog to be a lulav, rather, to be beautiful? That's none. Doesn't our Mishnah, the Mishnah tells us, if that when it comes to the Mishnah we just said in Chavtas and Beis, which told us that a lulav has the leaves that are spread apart, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Yagdena Melamad, Rabbi Yehuda says you have to tie them at the top. Why do you have to tie them at the top? The Gemara assumes right now, my time, alam hashem debay hadr, isn't the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda is because he requires the lulav to be beautiful. So the Gemara says, no, the Gemara time, but what's the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda? Because Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Mishum, Rabbi Tarfon, kapos tamarim. The Torah, in describing the lulav, it used the lashon of kapos tamarim. It was literally meaning the branches of a date palm. However, we're interpreting to mean kafus, that it has to be, kafus means with tied up. So it's not, the Torah doesn't have value, so you're able to dorish and yish im, which would tell you that's how it's read. So that's how you're able to read it kapos. It's said over as kapos. So then Kapos Tamarim would tell you that you'd be able to tell you that it should be tied up. This teaching of the lulav must be closed, and if it's spread apart, you have to tie it. Based on the drasha of kapos, meaning kafus, that it means tied up, and that's the reason that he has the drasha. Nothing to do with hidra, with it requiring to be beautiful. Then we're asked again another question: Rav Adov v'lo bai hadar. Is it really true? He doesn't require the lulav to be beautiful. Vatnan. Don't we learn in the Mishnah coming up on Lamed Vav? The Mishnah tells us: Ein ogdinus lulav ella bimino. We only bind the lulav with the type of lulav. That's why all the, if you ever know, I don't know if you ever noticed that, but if you see that the things that you use to put in those the kosher glass, what's in Yiddish, to hold up the lulav. I don't know, I'm blanking out on the English word, to hold the lulav, that the lulav holders, so those things are made of lulav. Those are very much, very, very dried out lulavs. They actually, you have kids or people make lulav holders that are green, that make them fresh from lulavs that were just made them. After a few days, you see they very, very quickly dry up when you put them in that state, but the first few days are actually really nice. They're nice and green, and you still see them from the lulav, but that's halacha, that the lulav has to be made only from the lulav itself. The Rebbe Yehuda, is the one who says this halacha, that you have to, along with binding the lulav with adasim and ravos, you can only use it the type of, it has to be a thing of these same meanings. So as Mara now wonders, my time, what's the reason Rabbi Yehuda requires it to be of the same type of species? And where says La Mishum to Bayadar, the Koroi has to be beautiful, and reuse it when it's only going to be beautiful, but if you bind it with a totally different thing, it looks ugly, it's not going to look nice. So the Koroi, that's the reason that you have to bind it. So the Gemara says, no, that's not the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda. Deha Amar Rava, as Rava told us, Afilu Besiv, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're allowed to bundle it even with ivy that grows around the trunk of the lulav tree, of the palm tree. Vafilu bikar didikla, even from the trunk of a palm tree. So the ivy and the bark of a palm are not the same color as a lulav. So clearly they're not making it look nicer, as Rashi points out. It's not a vort of hiddur, and yet they're still kosher because they are part of the same min. They're part of the same species of the lulav. So clearly it's not a din of hiddur. So rather, vela mai tamid Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda? Because hasam the kasavar lulav tzarech hegir, because there he holds that lulav requires to be bound together. You need to bound the lulav with the three other meanings, the total, well, really two other meanings. You're going to bind the three and then hold it together with the esrog, but you need to bind the three together. So lechora, if you hold it, it's leikuva, that you really, that me'ikar din, you need to bind it. And if you don't bind it, you're not yotze the mitzvah of lulav, in lulav with the dalav minim, v'imaisi mina achrene havilu chamishi minim. So if I really fundamentally hold that tying it is part and parcel of the mitzvah, so if I don't tie it, then I violate the mitzvah. So then that means if I tie it with something that's not part of the mitzvah, meaning let's say use a ribbon or something else that's not part of the mitzvah, so then according to Rabbi Yehuda, I've just added another, I've just added a fifth species, and we know just in the sixth parsha, we just learned the Baal Tosif, that there's an Isser Dereisa to add to a mitzvah. So here you'd be adding to the mitzvah, and you would not be Yotze, you'd be being Yotze mostly from the mitzvah, because again, once you assume the Eged, that the actual tying is part and parcel of the mitzvah, it needs to be with something that it can be used towards the mitzvah, and if you don't, you've now added to the mitzvah. So the Gemara says, that was when he answered those two questions of Rava. Now the Gemara says, wait a second. Etchang mi bai Rabbi Yehuda Hadar. Rava assumed another part of Rav. So we've just deflected the fact that about lulav, maybe that's true. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require hidra by lulav. But Rava asserted for sure that according to Rava, the esrog was clearly that it requires hidra. So the Gemara asked him that. Is that really true? Etchang mi bai Rabbi Yehuda Hidra. Does Rabbi Yehuda really require the esrog to be beautiful? Vatana the Rana Braisa. Arbas minim shebe lulav. With regards to the four meaning of the lulav, kishem shein posts them, and just like you can't subtract for them, and if you did, you'd be over, also this week's parsha is, you'd be over on Baal Tigra, that you'd be subtracting from a mitzvah. Kach ein mosaf in aleim, also you would not add a fifth min to them. Lo matza esrog, what happens if you can't find an esrog? Lo yavi, lo parish, lirman v'dover acha, don't bring a quince or a pomegranate or anything else. The Gemara's going to ask, I would have a havmina that I can use a pomegranate. I know that's not a lulav. I know that's not an esrog. What was my havmina over here? So the Gemara's going to ask that. The next one would, kimushing share, with regards to withered plants, those are going to be kosher for the mitzvah, because even though they lost most of their moisture, they're not completely yavish, not completely dried out. However, yavishin psulin, according to Tanakama, if they're dried out, they're going to be pasul. Rabbi Yehuda Omer af yavishin. Rabbi Yehuda says that even dried out are going to be kasher for the dalaminim, whether it regards to hadasim, whether it regards to the lulav, whether it regards to esrog. So that's the important part, right? Meaning whether it regards to esrog, we can even use that dried out plant. Remember Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda said, Maisa, there once happened something. What happened? Bivnei krachin. It happened in a large city. Shayu morshinus lulavim bivnei. They used to even give over as a yerusha. That people used to give over their lulavim to their grandchildren. So Rashi points out that they didn't have Ein Derech Al Makom Pardes. They didn't have the fields that properly grew the lulavim. So they didn't have lulav trees at all. So they gave out dried lulavs. Apparently it was a chashuv thing. So they gave it just like a person would give like their wedding ring or something that's worth a lot of money. They also gave over as Yerusha. They also gave over as inheritance. They used to give over the lulavim. That's how dry they were though. We see that that's how. So and they were still kasher. So they responded Amru either Lehem or it should be Lo because they responded to Rabbi Yehuda. So Amru Lo. They said back to Rabbi Yehuda, Misham Raya, you can bring a proof from that case, Ein Shas Al Chak Raya. When there's nothing else you can do, you can't bring a Raya for me that's going to be kosher. That's a Shas Al Chak is a major tzorech. So then it's not comparable to a case where you're not, in a normal case where you can't use a lulav that's yavish. So we'll get to the maskana of the Rishon about that. That's a very important line. But let's just finish up the question of Rava so we don't lose track over here. But this price says very clearly that dried out, for all dollar minim, that dried out things are going to be okay. That whether it's your hadassim, whether it's a ravos, whether it's your esrog, that's important. Even for an esrog, my lava esrog lechora. This is even on an esrog. No, so the answer is lo, 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 lo. So we've now deflected the question. We're not saying that an esrog needs to be that can be dried out. Rather, it can't be only hadassim and the ravos and the lulav. Those can be dried out, but not hadar, which is explicit again according to Rava that it needs to be beautiful. So now Rava's answered the question. But the very important thing that Rishonim discussed over here was that wait a second, that implies though that the Rabbanan didn't have an issue with Rabbi Yehuda. What did they respond to? Rabbi Yehuda said, "Oh, they used out a dried esrog when they really needed to." And they said, "Yeah, shasachak is not a raya that if you're really stuck, that's not a proof." So what do you mean though? If it's puzzle, even a shasachak, something shasachak is b'di'evadavid. Shasachak means that it's like you're stuck and it's b'di'evad. It's like something that you shouldn't do lechatchila, shouldn't do initially. But if you did it, then it's going to be kasher b'di'evad. That's shasachak, but it doesn't make something that's not kasher magically kasher. So this is machlokas rishon about this. The Ravid explains that when it comes to a shasachak, it wasn't mutter to use a dried out lulav and it wasn't mutter to make a bruch on it. But the dried out lulav is something that's totally pasul. This community, they didn't want to forget. There's a concept of shalotishkach. We're going to see that for the hamshech. That there's a concept that shalotishkach the mitzvah. You shouldn't forget about the mitzvah. So therefore, they allowed you to take the dried out lulav just as like a zecher to when they will have the kasher lulav. That's what they should use. That's what they meant. That's what it meant that they were using it not just simply to do as a zecher for the mitzvah, to do whatever they could as a zecher for the mitzvah. However, that was the Ravid. The Rush disagrees. The Rush says no. That this was. What do you mean? You've just added so much into the Gemara. The Gemara never says that they're doing it as a zecher. The Gemara implies that even according to Chachamim, this was not totally fine. In this circumstance, it was fine. So he says that when you use a dried out lulav, even the Chachamim would agree that in such a circumstance, it's mutter. And the Rush explains that the whole concept of hider, what is pre-et hader? It's a concept we discussed it before in Halacha. Seemingly, the Rush is alluding to this. It's a similar that the Torah is telling you pre-eats hadar is something the Chachamim have the ability to establish. So the Chachamim have established that this is normally hadar. That obviously a dried up lulav is not beautiful. However, where you have no other lulav available, they said, no, that is beautiful. That's beautiful because that's the only thing you have accessible. So then for everybody, that's beautiful because nothing else is available. So therefore, according to the Rush, you would be allowed to be yotze with it. And if you have a dried out lulav, it would, in a shas chak, where there's nothing even close to around you, that would be okay. And the nafkamina would be, can make a bracha. This actually machlokas al chamaisa between Shulchan Aruch and Nirma. The Shulchan Aruch says that someone who doesn't, the whole community, nowhere around you, that's al shayla, how far does it have to be? The Mishabura says that if you can't find it in the entire city, that's the chor. That's going to be enough to be called the shas chak. So, if the entire city, nobody has an esrog where you are, so the Shulchan Aruch says that you can take that lulav. However, you don't make a bracha over it. The Ramah disagrees. The Ramah says no. Based on the Rush, the Ramah says that you would make a bracha if it's a shas chak. You would make a bracha. So, halacha l'maisa, they argued over this. So that's what we see from here, the very fundamental machlokas about lulav ayavish b'shas chak. What can you do with it? Now the Gemara continues. Amar Bar. We learn. And the brayis like shem she'in poskin l'makach and mosifin aleim. Just like you're not allowed to subtract from the dalad minim, so too you can't add to them. So the Gemara says pshita. It's obvious that you can't add. You'd be over. Bal Tosef was just mentioned if you add a fifth min to the lulav. So the Gemara says no. Ma'adu same. I would have said the following. Hoyal v'mer Rabbi lulav terach eger. Rabbi Yehuda says that you have to bind. The lulav with the other three minim. B'maisim mina achrina. If someone brings another min, then and you don't bind them though. I would have thought that this one is is with it, and this one's also with it. It's not together because they're not bound. Kamash Malan, the Bryce is telling us that that's also not allowed. That even if you add the fifth min without actually bundling them together, that's still considered adding to the mitzvah, and that would be an issue of Baal Tosef, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, that there's an issue over here with adding the fifth min together with the other ones, because ideally you should have the four minim together without anything else with them. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. So now the Gemara continues, Amar Mar, we learn in the Braisa, Lo Matza Esrog, Lo Yavi, Lo Minu, Lo Barash, Lo Daracha. The Braisa told us, as we mentioned, and we're going to get back to this, that if you can't find an Esrog, you shouldn't use the quince or the pomegranate or anything else. The Gemara says, Pshita, what do you mean? I would have thought that you should use a pomegranate for your Lulu of Adanisht. Well, how could you tell me that would be a Havmina? The Gemara says, Mad, the same, I would have thought, Leis, Ki Heche, the Shultish, Kaftor, Esrog. Just like we just mentioned that the Ravid said that was actually, we do that by a lulav hayavish. And according to the Rebbe, that's such a valid havamina. That's what that town was doing. But bnei krachin, that town, that's literally what happened. That they didn't want to forget about esrog. So hoti ovir, that would have had a havamina that you shouldn't forget about esrog. So the Gemara says kamash mono. The Bryce is telling us you shouldn't use a different min though. You shouldn't use a pomegranate. Zimdin enough a korvamina. That's going to lead to a very bad thing happening. The ice in the mitzvah, people are going to think, oh yeah, that's a priyatzader. Priyatzader is a pomegranate. That's very beautiful, and people are going to start shaking the lulav and esrog with an esrog, not an esrog. Maybe they're going to use a pomegranate, thinking that that's an esrog, and that's why we don't do that. So that's what we mentioned about using a pomegranate. But what about if you don't have 4 minim? So is there an inyan to take 3 shelo tishkach toras lulav? So that the poskim do bring down that you should. Because no one's going to ever think that you should only use 3 minim, because the Torah says explicitly 4. So therefore, Therefore, you can use 3, maybe in an esrog, there's a different shaila in the Koranim, but really 3, the poskim do bring down at least a zecher, you can do that. I remember I once was given a book for my bar mitzvah, I think it was going back a long time, right before mitzvah, someone gave me a present, I think it was called Sukkah Secrets. It was a very nice, had a lot of stories, I got halacha also, it was a very, very, very good sefer for someone around the bar mitzvah age, and they had like stories, and one of them was about even in Auschwitz, they were able to sneak in the dal minim, but I think that they said that they were only able to get 3, so from this these achronim over here that say you don't make a bracha, but there's still shalotish kaftoras, there's still an inyan to shake at least three of the minim. Even if you don't have all 4, you could still shake 3. Okay, that's what comes out. We just mentioned using a different min would be a problem, but using just the 3 minim would not be shalotish kach. That would apply, that we don't want to forget the concept of shaking lulav and esrog, so there would be an inyan to shake just 3. So now the Gemara continues. The Gemara says tashma. So again, we're discussing how Rava said that even according to Biyuda, the esrog requires. Here, the Gemara wants to bring a proof against Rava. We're bringing a proof from the Braisa against Rava. And where it says Esrog Yashan Pasul, an old Esrog is going to be Pasul. That's the Tanakama. Rebuda says an old Esrog is going to be Kasher. So the Rishonim explained that an old Esrog Lachor is something that's very dried out and it's obviously not going to be beautiful. It's no longer Hidr anymore. So the Gemara says, you're right. Tiyufta the Rava, Tiyufta, double knockout. This is a double refutation. You don't survive a double knockout. That means that it's done. And we've rejected Rava, that Rebuda requires Hidr on the Esrog. Rebuda doesn't require Hidr on the Esrog. The Gemara says, about Hidr, but is that really true? How can Rabbi Yehuda say that a Esrog doesn't need to be beautiful? The way you learn in the Mishnah that regarding an Esrog, Ayara Kakarsi, that if an Esrog is green like a leek, Rabbi Yehuda says that it's pasul. Lav Mishum Debai Hidr, isn't it? Because Rabbi Yehuda requires the Esrog to be beautiful, and green is not going to be beautiful. The Gemara says, no, that's not why Rabbi Yehuda says that it's pasul. Lav Mishum Degamar Peri, because its fruit is not fully developed. If it's not fully grown, and therefore it's not considered a fruit of the Hadar tree, and therefore it's going to be pasul. It's important to know, we'll get to this more later, but that a green esrog, if it's totally green, it's not totally very, very green, that's a major issue. If it's starting to turn yellow, that's what the votes can bring down, is going to be kasher. But lechora, this is something I never understood, that in Eretz Yisrael, because they usually ship the earlier batch to Chutzlaretz and mainly to America, that a lot of the esrogim they sell are much more green. Even in America, some years you'll get pretty green ones. But the greener ones are more. If you have a yellow one that looks less nice and still maybe more spots on it, whatever, lechora, that's still better than any green one you'll find. People will take a green one with nothing on it and say how beautiful it is. Lechora, the yellow one is still. I asked Renan, so I think Renan still agreed to what I said when I asked him a few years ago about that. That's something I never understood, that people will take a green one. Lechora, even if you have a yellow one that looks much less nice, you should still get the yellow one. Either way, that's what the din of a green. And if it's fully green, if it's mamish green, that's a alpi kabbalah. There's an inyan. That's a whole shayla. There's even a shayla about the mekubalim about that. That alpi zohar, people say maybe it should be a little bit greener. But the mekubalim, some use that alpi nigla. For sure, we assume yellow is lechachila. Now the Gemara says, again, because if it's not green, it's not fully developed. We'll get to a little bit more in the Hemshech of the Gemara later on. The Gemara says, Tashmas, we learn a proof another Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Shir Esrog Katan. What is the smallest shir of an Esrog? That is, Rabbi Meir Omer, egg goes, Rabbi Meir says it has to be a walnut size, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Kibetz, it has to be the size of an egg. So Gemara wonders now, L'chor Rabbi Yehuda is assuming, Av Mishum Dabai Hadar, that the reason Rabbi Yehuda requires a bigger shear of an egg is because it has to be beautiful, and anything less than an egg is not beautiful. So Gemara says, no, Mishum Dabai Hadar, the same thing, that when it's less than that shear, it's not developed. So clearly, it's not the size of an egg, it's not developed yet, and therefore it's not going to be kosher. Tosfos point out that's even if it's fully developed and it's less than an egg, that's also going to be pasul. That's considered a fruit of something that's quality fruit, so therefore even that would be pasul, even if you know it's fully developed. Now the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, wait a second, Tashma, we'll bring another proof from another Mishnah against Rava. The Mishnah says, what's the maximum shear? The maximum shear for an esrog also. The maximum shear for an esrog is going to be that if you're able to hold two of them in one hand. Rabbi Yehuda says even one has to be held in both hands. It's going to be kasher. My time. So what is the reason of Rabbi Yehuda? La mishum debay hadar. Rabbi Yehuda requires that it has to be the size which one can hold two of them in one hand is because it requires it to be beautiful, and anything bigger than that is going to be is not going to be beautiful. The Gemara says, no, also here, low. No, that's not the reason. Rabba said, with regards to the mitzvah of lulav, dafka, the lulav has to be the right, and the esrog has to be the left. Why is it that the lulav is in the right? Because they have three of them. As they have the lulav, adas, minarabba, so as opposed to esrog has... the esrog only has one, so that's why it says over there. The Gemara's going to enter that later. That's what Rashi points out over here. Zimna mechavalei vasel chosak. You're going to have your the other way around. You're going to have the esrog on the right, so you're going to switch it around. But you're going to switch it around, and you have such a big esrog, then it's going to come to fall. Asilapsule, it's going to fall on the ground, and then you're going to drop the pitum's going to break, and it's going to become puzzle. That's why Rabbi Yehuda. It's just a practical reason why Rabbi Yehuda requires a smaller shear for the esrog. The Gemara says ve'ela Rabbi Yehuda haksev hader. Fine. So he just agreed to all that. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require the esrog to be beautiful, but at the end of the day, the pasuk says that it has to be beautiful. So what does Rabbi Yehuda do with that pasuk? It says that it has to be pre-etz hadar. So the Gemara answers, no, ahu hadar be'ilano mishana l'shana. Rabbi Yehuda's different interpretation doesn't mean hadar the lashon of beautiful. Rather, it means hadar. It means that something that is literally dwelling, that it's able to dwell for several years. That's an allusion to esrog, and it's not talking about beautiful. It's a different meaning, and totally nothing to do with beautiful. Means that it goes from year to year, and that's something that's uncommon. That usually when something will grow for a long time, it'll fall off. That is it's giving an explanation of describing a description rather of the esrog. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda. It's not telling you that it has to be beautiful. Rather, a description of the type of how it's growing, and not that it has to be beautiful. Now we're up to the next part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah told us shel asherah v'shel rodachas, that a lula from an asherah or from a city that has to be destroyed because people rove the city, did avodah zarah, and destroyed the whole city. So that is going to be puzzles. The Gemara says, but wait a second, v'shel asherah, puzzles are really true, then asherah is going to be puzzle. Asherah again is people worship the tree as avodah zarah. The Gemara said, Amar Rava, didn't Rava tell us lula v'shel avodah zarah? Lo yitol, if a lula, you shouldn't take it lechachila for the mitzvah. However, if you did, v'matal kasher. And Rava is talking about a lulav that a person's using for the avodah zarah, and you're going to fill your obligation with this type of lulav b'di'evad. What do you mean? Isn't it something it's an isra hana? You have to destroy it. You have to burn it. You have to get rid of this lulav if it's in a lulav of an asherah. How could it be that Rava tells us it's kasher b'di'evad? So Rashi already addressed this. Rashi says because that mitzvah lav la'enos nisnu. Yes, there's an isra hana on this lulav, but the mitzvah of the lulav is lav la'enos is not considered. You're not getting personal benefit from it. It's not a benefit. It's also for you to have benefit from a lulav of an avodah zarah thing. This isn't considered benefit for you because you're doing a mitzvah. Mitzvah is lav la'enos, and you're not being nene from it. So the Gemara says, so therefore, ha'cha b'asher de Moshe eskinan. So here, no, we're dealing with a different asher. We're talking about the asher is in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and those are asheras in Dvarim. Also, we just discussed this, that anything that they find there, they have to get rid of it and burn it. So the ketute mitzvah asher, once you have to burn it, specifically burn it, once you specifically have to burn it, then it ketute mitzvah shi'ure. It'll lower the shear. It's lowering the shear because something that has to be burnt, we're viewing it as if like we could call it omed lisrof kesarof dami. Basically, we're saying that anything that has to be burnt is like it's already been burnt, and therefore you don't have the minimum shear of a lulav. So therefore, once something has to be burnt, we're assuming is no longer fit to be a lulav. The Achronim discussed this, and they said that only applies to something that actually has to have a shear, has to have a unit, like a lulav, let's say, has to have a four tefachim or a shofar. However, something which can literally can be made into particles, and you can have an infinite number of particles, l'chora should be kasher. That's the machlokas Achronim about this. They assume that maybe with schach, if you have this schach that has to be burnt, l'chura, that schach would be kosher to be used, because you're using many, 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 many particles to combine to make your shade, and therefore be kosher. L'chor by schach, that should be kosher, as opposed to a lulav or a shofar, it's a unit, something that has to be, that you don't have a valuable shear, as opposed to schach, it's not it's something that needs to be a unit, but just needs to be something that covers you, makes you shade. The daka stick difference, that Chorin point out, l'chor, it should be kosher. Now the Gemara says, daika, now maybe we can bring a proof from this from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, the Mishnah says that a lulav has to be similar to that of an ir nidachas. The fact that the lulav and ir nidachas has to be burnt. So therefore, over here, lechor, this lulav also of the nasher had to be burnt, and that was what times of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was the ones that are mentioned when they first came to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, we'll just quickly do the next part of the Mishnah. The next part of the Mishnah says nikdam rosho. If the top of the lulav was cut off, that it's going to be puzzled. They told us halacha only regards to actually chopped off. Vanista kasher. If it was split, the lulav is going to be kasher. This is for the tips of the leaves are split open. Rashi implies that that part with the leaves were broken off. So that's what that was what I mean by splits. The Gemara says v'nista kasher, but it's really true that a split lulav is kasher. V'atana, the Braisa tells us lulav kafaf, a lulav that's bent over, that is bent over like a fish hook, that is going to be. Or kavats, or the continuing the next time it is kavats is very thorny. Saduk, or if it's split, akum domel magal, or curved like a sickle, puzzle. All these cases are going to be puzzle. So the chor this brace is saying puzzle has to be puzzle. Chor is puzzle, or if it's turned a branch, it's going to be puzzle. Domel chor is kasher. If it's similar to hardened branch, it's going to be kasher. So we see from here that a split lulav is going to be puzzle. So how do we answer this? Amar of papa to avid kehemnak. The brace referring to the lulav was made like a hemnak, where the brace is telling of a split lulav is puzzle. It didn't refer to one whose leaves have split open, but rather that it grew in a shape of a hemnak, which is like a thing that was split in like a fork. They put those split open over there. That's what we're referring to over here. That lulav is going to be pasul. But a lulav that just split on a different area is going to be kasher. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, we'll pick up with akum, domet, lemagal, Be'ez Hashem in tomorrow's daf.